Welcome to another edition of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I am Lauren Fox, and Andrew Hansen is sitting across the way from me here in the studio. So you can introduce yourself, maybe.
Hello, everyone.
You're going to be on the intro this time.
I'm the guy who's going to do Fox's Hot Stove Report. And in case you didn't know, I was coming to the station a couple weeks ago. Actually heard Brian Scalabrine, of all people, talking on NBA Radio, the only other radio station worth listening to besides 105.1. And he was actually asking his co-host what the hot stove, what that term means.
Really?
And so his co-host explained to him, well, it's a baseball term, and you sit around and you try and stay warm, and you talk about baseball when it's cold out. So we'll do that this week.
And it is cold. We do not have a stove here in the Bedford 105.1 studios, but we do have some special guests. We'll be joined by Bedford High boys basketball coach Mark Elmendorf, Joe Riccio, who is the president of the Bedford Little League, and then we'll talk a little bit of NFL playoffs. We'll also hit on the Fox's Hot Stove Report, and I actually remember the name of it this time, as well as a couple other things. So with that, we'll be back. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports. I am Lauren Fox alongside Andrew Hansen, and we have a special guest with us this week, the coach of the Bedford boys basketball team, Mark Elmendorf, joining us. Coach, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Last week, of course, it is school break week, but that does not mean it's a break if you are a high school varsity athlete. In fact, oftentimes far from it. And last week, you guys had the Queen City Invitational, a couple nice wins against Salem and Trinity. But, of course, then you run into Exeter for the second time in about a week. How does facing one of the top teams in the state help you guys get the experience that you need early in the season?
Well, the tournament was overall, you know, really, really fun for us. I thought it was a good tournament. It's funny that the game I thought we played in the best, against Exeter, we lost. Exeter is very, very good, very talented, very deep. And I think the thing that will help them throughout the season is they have 5, 6, 7 kids who can all really, really shoot, which, you know, will help them tremendously. You know, the Salem game was good. The Trinity game was good, but we didn't play. You know, one of the things I preach all the time, the kids, we got to play for 32 minutes, got to play the whole game. And we had at least 2 or 3 quarters in each of those games where we were really, really good. But then we had 8, 10, 12 minutes where we struggled. And that's just, you know, because it's the beginning of the year and we're still learning and still trying to create some chemistry that we need to do better at. So, you know, that's what we take away from the tournament.
Right. You referenced struggling and keeping it going for 32 minutes. That's often a challenge, particularly when you have a younger team and you're trying to get them to gel a bit. What does going up against a tough team like Exeter twice teach you early in the season?
Well, the best thing is, especially after the game up at Memorial in the Queen City, is we can beat them. You know, if we play well and we do the things that we're going to, you know, be good at, we gave them a great game. I mean, we were up 2 with 10 seconds to go and ended up, you know, they made a great shot to go into overtime. And then the overtime was back and forth the whole way. I mean, they're the number one team in the state, or they were before they probably lost the Memorial.
Yeah.
But they're good. And we were right there with them the whole game. When we played them opening night, we were right there. We were winning going into the fourth quarter. So the big takeaway is for the kids is that we can beat them. You know, we had practice yesterday, and I said to the kids, I don't know how many teams I saw over Christmas vacation. I'm a absolute junkie about going to games. But, I mean, I saw at least 8 or 10 teams over the break, and there's no question that if we play well and do the things we have to do, we'll be right there. But, you know, getting to that point is the challenge.
Coach, you mentioned playing for 32 minutes, and you certainly you certainly were right with Exeter in the regular season opener until the game got away in the fourth quarter. And then it seemed like you really did play for 32 minutes with Londonderry because the game was a one possession game in the last minute. You know, both games turned out to be hard-fought losses. Can that help with teaching a team early in the season where you have a hard-fought loss and it helps you to drive home that message of, hey, guys, we can play with these teams. We're just a couple possessions away to get over the hump, so we got to play for 32 minutes to finish off a close game like this.
No question. You know, a lot of people say you learn a lot more from a loss than you do from a win, and I certainly think that's the case. You know, the Londonderry game, like you said, was we did play well for 32 minutes. They were very, very good that night, as were we, I thought. It did come down to a couple possessions, but, you know, part of the challenge for me is creating, you know, the chemistry on this team that we had in the past, and we will certainly get there. You know, we're breaking in some new kids. We are an experienced team, but at the same time, we need some of the younger kids who didn't get a lot of varsity time in the past to produce, and I, no question that will happen, I think. But it's going to take some time, and, you know, I think in the end we'll be fine, but the first two games were a little bit of a struggle.
That's what can happen at the beginning of a season. We are with Bedford High basketball coach Mark Elmendorf, and you referenced it. You have some good experience on this year's team, but you lost a couple guys last year who had a great deal of leadership, a couple of the seniors who left, Liam Green among them. How do you replace those senior leaders going into this year, and how do you kind of cultivate that leadership among some of the younger guys and hopefully get some of the guys who are a little bit younger to hold that mantle longer?
Great question. No question we missed Liam Green. He was and always will be probably one of the best kids I've ever coached, a tremendous leader. Troy Meservey, who also graduated, was a huge influence on the team as well. But, you know, we have, as you said, we have great, great senior leadership again. Nick Focus and Max Chartier are our two captains and are doing a fantastic job, two of the best kids you could ever want. But, you know, we just have to, everybody has to define their roles. And, you know, we talk about roles all the time. And, you know, we miss Troy's scoring and we miss Liam's leadership. But other kids are certainly capable of filling that up. But we just going to, it's taking a little bit more time than we had hoped. So, you know, I remember talking to Nick Focus back last season that, you know, when Troy is gone, that, you know, one of your jobs is going to be to pick up his scoring slack. And he's doing that. But we also thought we'd get a little bit more from some other people. But, again, no question in my mind that will happen as we progress.
Coach, let's talk about the offensive side of the ball here a little bit. And you mentioned Max Chartier and Nick Mokas. And they have stood out so far in the two games that I've seen in terms of their offensive versatility, where they can both drive and slash to the basket, and they also both have a perimeter game. Seems like Max is more of a mid-range shooter. Mokas can stretch it out to three-point land. How important is their offensive versatility to you?
Well, it's huge. You know, I'm blessed to have three kids, and I'm going to add one to what you were saying, that can score pretty much, not at will, but are great, great scorers. Max is an incredibly dynamic player. He's, as you said, he's got a great mid-range jump shot. He's explosive getting to the basket. He creates his own shot as well as anybody right now. He's a preseason first-team All-State kid. I think he had six against Exeter in the first game, but since then he's had at least 20 in every game, I think. He's just a great scorer. Nick, as you said, does shoot a little bit longer mid-range from the perimeter. He's got a great three-point shot. We actually would like Nick to shoot more. But, you know, he wants to distribute the ball a little bit. He's a very heady player. He's a very smart player. He likes to try to get everybody involved. And then we have a very, very good low post player who's kind of rounded into shape as we speak in Nolan Anderson, who got great footwork in the post, and another great leader. He's not a captain, but he's certainly a leader. So those three kids, any coach in the state would want to have them on their team. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
Coach, do you like to call a lot of specific half-court plays on offense, or do you like to have more of a free-form offense where guys like Chartier and Mokas are creating for others?
Well, we run a lot of motion. I wouldn't call it free-form because we have certain rules in it. But one of the things I say to kids all the time, and I mean it, is I don't want kids to be robots. Not that they have the green light, but if we have a kid who feels he can take his defender, take him. But, you know, we're disciplined, but at the same time, we have kids who can score, and we want them to score. So I think we're trying to have the best of both worlds there.
Certainly makes sense. We are here with Bedford High basketball coach Mark Elmendorf. And I guess one more question before we let you go. Of course, we're still early in the season, just got off the Queen City Invitational. What do you see as far as your team rounding into shape? Are things about where you expected them to be or further along, not quite as far along?
Great question. I don't think we're as far along as I thought we would be. I certainly did not expect to be 0-2 at this point, and that's not taking away anything from Exeter or Londonderry, but both very, very good teams. You know, I think as the season gets better, we're going to get better and better and better. We had some injuries in the preseason that I think that hurt us. We had some kids that, you know, weren't as physically ready to go as I had hoped. And that's not a criticism of them. That's just the way it was. But I certainly think that we haven't even begun to play our best basketball yet. And, yeah, I think we're going to get way better.
I tell you what, you watch the team. Andrew and I were at that Londonderry game doing play-by-play, and you watch it, and there are certainly a lot of aspects that you say, but if for this, but if for that. Just little things here and there that you have the opportunity, and I'm sure you pick them up far more acutely than either of us would, but if you have the opportunity to kind of refine some of these guys a bit, the sky's the limit. This could be a great team. It has the right components as far as leadership goes. It has a nice big post player. Like Andrew said, it has some nice guys who can create on offense. Now it's just a matter of trying to limit some of the mistakes. And in the Londonderry game, I don't even know that they were mistakes. There were some layups that were missed that you make a couple of those late in the game, and you're talking about a tie ball game instead of a 4-point affair.
You have to remind me.
Yeah,
several missed opportunities in that Londonderry game, which was frustrating. But you know, they're high school kids. They're all, you know, I tell people all the time, I am blessed to work with just great, great kids. You know, I've been a teacher in Bedford for so long, and I know all the kids there so well. But you know, it's just a great place to work, great place to coach, and other coaches are just so envious of the situation that we have as far as the kind of kids that we work with. So I'll take some of those other things that we, you know, miss layups. I go to practice happy every day, so, again, I'm incredibly blessed.
Hey, that's the way to do it. Well, as always, we appreciate the time. We look forward to talking to you hopefully in a few weeks, and good luck next time out.
All right, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach. That was Mark Elmendorf, the boys basketball coach at Bedford High School. We'll be back after this. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, Lauren Fox alongside Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by the president of the Bedford Little League, which is a very important role, and there's always got to be one guy who signs up to do it every year, and in this case, the lucky winner was none other than Joe Riccio. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Lauren and Andrew.
That is a challenging role, to say the least, and of course it's a good sized league. We have 450 kids, give or take, every year, a lot of age groups, a lot of practices. So thank you for joining us, and thank you for stepping up for that role. But before we get into Little League, I know you're a baseball fan. What do you think? The Yankees with Aaron Judge and now Giancarlo Stanton, do the Red Sox stand any kind of a chance?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I didn't expect you to come out swinging like this, Warren. But it's a really tough situation for the Red Sox, but they have a good pitching staff, and they'll be fine. They'll be competitive as they are every year. There's a couple other prospects out there that will help them out. Maybe they'll ink a deal with J.D. Martinez or, you know, get another big bat in the lineup. But you have to hand it to the Yankees for pulling it together and doing it the way they did it. They went all out.
Yeah, it's not something that I think any of us thought was going to happen. I would have expected that a California guy like him would have gone back to the West Coast, and the whole talk of him going to St. Louis, I wasn't terribly sold on. But, hey, one thing leads to another, and now he's in the Big Apple, and I guess, yeah, we'll be seeing a fair share of him on TV, because, you know, when the Yankees and the Red Sox are playing, Fox loves nothing more than to show us all 4 hours and 20 minutes of those games. So
yep, there should be several epic games, I would imagine, this summer. I'm looking forward to it. Any baseball fan's got to enjoy watching that, and no different this year.
Should be a lot of fun. So with that, we go from the four-hour games to games that are roughly 2 hours, Little League Baseball, which is far more fun to watch, a completely different pace. How did you first get involved with Little League?
Well, I have an older son. He's 17 now. He played through Little League, and from the time he was probably 6 or 7 years old until he was 12. And I was a parent and just enjoyed watching the games and being at the field every game and watching practices. So I really didn't get it. I didn't get involved at all when watching him play through. But as my younger son, John, started coming up through, he had a different knack for the game. He seemed to really, really enjoy it. And, I was tired of watching from the sideline, decided to get involved. And, you know, just as a parent wanting to help, coach young players, my son included, and his friends, and just get involved, a little bit more involved. It's a great organization. Little League has been great for a number of years for kids of Bedford to get in and play some baseball, learn the game of baseball, build relationships, long-lasting relationships with their friends, and get out and get some physical activity in the spring and summertime.
It's a lot of fun, and I know it's something that that we look forward to getting out and seeing and just being a part of sun and warmth, which seems like it will never happen again. But here with Joe Riccio, the president of the Bedford Little League. So Andrew has a couple of younger kids. He hasn't been through this rite of passage that is T-ball, but it seems like a lot of the time T-ball is, okay, if I can make it through T-ball, make it through A-ball, make it through those lower levels where the kids are really learning the skills and starting to put it together, then you start to get to things that are a lot more fun. And you and I are at that point now when the kids are older, and it really is baseball, and it's got that great pace and feel to it. But Bedford Little League has done a lot in the last few years to improve the experience for younger players. Shed a little light on what's been done to make things more fun for younger players and their parents.
Well, you're exactly right, Lauren, when you say watching the kids grow and develop as players, as they learn the game, as they learn these specific skills that are being taught to them, and as they just build the relationships around them and look forward to playing every spring. Like you said, the weather's good, and that's what we look forward to after a long New England winter, is getting out and playing some baseball in the spring. T-ball is, you know, like you said, a rite of passage. That's a great way of putting it. Introduces the young players to the game of baseball. Moving on from there, we have single A, double A baseball, which is 6 and 7 and 8 year olds. And they get to learn a little bit more of the finer skills of actually how the positions are played, you know, where they get played, a little bit more specifically of base running and other things like that. And then you get into double A, which we introduce pitching, and it starts as coach pitch, but then we get into the players pitching, and they further develop that skill and then move on to AAA and majors. which is the game that most people are used to seeing, just a full-fledged baseball game, six innings, and some very exciting games, everything from home runs over the fence to double plays. The kids really develop quite a bit at that age.
It's a lot of fun getting to that point. Now, how do you keep kids interested? I know you've coached for a while. How do you keep kids interested in the game of baseball and make it fun for them and keep them coming back?
Well, I think the big thing is fun. Like you said, they have to enjoy it. You know, when you enjoy something, you want to do more of it. So every kid is different. So kids get motivated differently, just like as adults. You know, everyone gets motivated in their own way, and things that sometimes it's small victories or small successes that really helps a kid build some confidence, and then that helps have, you know, helps them have more fun. As far as just trying to, you know, explain to the kids and express to the kids that every kid's important. I don't care if you're the elite player or you're, you know, the bottom two batters in the order. Everyone has a position on the team, and everyone has a purpose, and everyone has a contribution to make. And I think once they see that and they get involved and they have little success, that becomes bigger successes. And if that all happens, then the kids typically enjoy it. And that's what it's all about, having fun.
Joe, you know, Lauren had mentioned that I haven't been through the T-ball level yet with my kids, although I still remember playing T-ball in Maine when I was five. I can remember we played next to the soccer field, and so it was just a makeshift baseball field with some bases laid down. And, you know, I can still remember playing in those games, and it got me hooked, and I was a baseball player for life. Have you found that the kids who play T-ball and then single A and double A and you know, have some fun and have some early successes, like you just mentioned, get hooked and, you know, are the ones who are more likely to end up playing in the majors in Little League?
Yes. I mean, I think the players that do have success as younger age do continue to play later in life. However, you know, we've had kids come in at different ages and step onto a field for the first time at 10 years old and, you know, really fall in love with the game. So it really is open to everyone. You can step in at 10 or 11 and still be, you know, especially if they're already athletic, you know, bringing that to the table, that makes it a lot easier to step in. But anyone could come in and play. We had a couple of kids this past fall who hadn't played before, hadn't played, I guess, probably 3 or 4 years, and they were, you know, 10, 11 years old, and they were able to step in and, you know, with some practice, and, you know, get involved in the game and relearn the game at a different level and understand it and have fun. So we'd like to see that. And that's, you know, you could always come back to the game. So it's not just for, you know, people that have played for their whole lives.
Now, with that in mind, this is not the kind of place that you can play baseball all year round, or at least play baseball outside all year round. It's been a little bit too cold for that. What programs does the Little League have in the off season for kids to keep sharp now, and what kind of facilities do they have access to?
Well, you know, we're really excited about offering the winter workout program started in February. So we have worked to deal with Play Ball out of Manchester. USA out of Manchester to have winter workouts held there. So it's going to be run by Bedford Little League, and it's going to be on Mondays for the month of February, where we're going to have run clinics and have some opportunities for kids to kind of work out some of the, you know, the rust that they've maybe developed over the winter and get them moving a little bit. You know, throwing the ball, hitting, working on some pitching clinics, catching clinics, and then once we develop the teams, actually start having team practices starting in March. So, you know, even though there's snow coming tomorrow, we're still looking in a couple of weeks to be playing some baseball.
Yeah, well, and what I've found too is a lot of the things that were kind of inaccessible when we were kids, sock nets and things along those lines, you can get on Amazon now and find a good sock net for $60-$70 just to get some reps in. I hear a certain child in my house frequently ask, "Mom, can you pull the car out so that I can hit?"
yeah, it's
not warm in the garage.
And, you know, at least it gets them out of the video game mode or gets them out of the house a little bit. But, yeah, same thing in my house. You know, we're having that set up and the tee set up in the garage, pull the car out of the garage and let them hit.
Yep.
And I think it's a great thing. The kids have, you know, the gear that's out there, the you know, you have all different price range, you know, from the bottom line to, you know, elite expensive gear. But it's all accessible. One of the interesting things that's going to happen this year, and you know about this, Lauren, is the bats have changed. The standards for Little League bats have changed. So any bat that was purchased before September 1st of 2017 will no longer be allowed in Little League. So, you know, that's changing things a lot. And Bedford Little League has invested some money to purchase some bats to make sure that every team that we field has a bat accessible to the kids. So the kids don't have to go out necessarily and buy their own bat. Many will. Most probably will. But, you know, if it's a first time playing and they're not sure if they want to, you know, make that investment in the gear, we do have gear available for them to use.
And that's the reason they changed the bats. That's a player safety issue, correct?
Yes. Yep. You know, as the bat technology is improved, the ball is traveling a lot faster and harder and further, and they're making the adjustments in the bats to maybe tamp that down a little bit. You've got to remember, with Little League, it's a shorter field. It's 46, so it's 46 and a half feet from pitcher's mound to the plate and 60 feet down the baselines. So you have a little bit of a shorter field, so everyone's playing a little closer to the batter. And when the ball starts coming at them at a high velocity, you know, 11, 12-year-olds can hit the ball pretty hard. I think it becomes a safety issue. So I think that's what they wanted to address.
The safety issue for some of us, even the older ones out there on the mound, if our reaction time isn't quite what it used to be. So,
right. Yep.
So, I know we're close to one Little League sign-up deadline. How can somebody sign up for the league? And I guess go into a little bit more detail on that deadline.
Okay. Basically go to our website, which is, League Athletics, website. So Bedford Little League, and you'll be able to get on and sign up with the registration.
Perfect. And then
so
if
there's...
Go ahead.
Oh, so each age group has a different registration. It's all spelled out on there. So as a parent, if you haven't registered your child in the past, then you have to go on and create your own registration profile, and then from there you can register your children.
And then
it's broken out to different age group, so it's really easy to use. Just click on it and register.
Perfect. And if a parent wants to coach, what is the process that they can go through as well? It's pretty seamless there too, right?
Yeah. Same through. Actually, while you're registering your child, you can actually click on that you'd be interested in help coach or manage a team or volunteer in any way. You don't have to be a baseball, you know, expert to be involved and help.
Perfect. So the website bedfordll.com, and if you sign up before January 15th, it's a $20 drop in price. The prices will go up $20 on January 15th. So,
yep.
And
great opportunity to do it now, save $20. And the other advantage, the sooner you do it, the better, because you'll get email notifications about the upcoming winter workouts. So then you'll be eligible to participate in those workouts, which is great. It's going to be a great opportunity. The month of February, you know, getting, like I said before, you know, kind of working off the rust and getting some, you know, exercise in and reconnecting with some friends. And then we'll pick the teams, and then the teams will be practicing indoors until probably the second week of April and get out in the field and start playing.
Awesome. Yep, we love winter. It's great to be able to get out and ski, skate on ponds, all that sort of stuff. But there's nothing like being around the complex during April, May, June when there are games going on. That's for sure.
I'm looking forward to it. I think we have a great group of people, great families involved. Like you said before, we have close to 500 players involved in Bedford Little League, and just a testament to the people that, you know, show up and volunteer their time and coach, and, you know, the parents are supportive, and you know, it's a great atmosphere, and it's just a great thing to be involved in. I'm just been thrilled to do it, and my son is 12, so this is probably going to be winding down for me, but I'll still be accessible and actively involved whenever anyone needs anything, because it's that type of program. You know, just to extrapolate on that a little bit, you know, we have people that have gone through and coached, and they've come back and helped out with coaching and helping out in clinics and really doing a lot of different things to support the league well past the time that kids have already graduated through the program. So it's great to see. It's a great community.
Well, I know you and I had fun last year coaching when Kevin Levine came out with his son Grant, and what was it? Within a couple weeks after that, we were watching footage of Grant hitting upper deck shots at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, it was something. It really was. And, you know, my son keeps talking about it and still talks about it and probably will for a number of years as we see what Grant does in the future. And Kevin's been a great guy. He very helpful, again, coming back. You know, he's got a full schedule with his boys, but, you know, coming back and giving back to Bedford Little League has really been appreciated. And, you know, that's the type of people that, you know, really make this thing work. And, yeah, we did have a good time this summer, though. It was great. You know, and that's the other thing, Lauren. You know, baseball doesn't necessarily end in the spring with the spring program. There's a lot of opportunities in the summer, and it's not just the elite district teams. We put together many other tournament teams, like the Matty Dobbins team for 9- and 10-year-olds, the Salem tournament that we participated in last summer for 11 and 12s. So there's a lot of different opportunities that go past the spring Little League season.
Well, we appreciate all you do for the Little League, and look forward to seeing you soon. Appreciate
it, Joe. Well, thanks,
Lauren. Thank
you. Take care, Andrew. It was nice talking to you guys.
Best of luck this season.
Good talking to you. That was Joe Riccio, the president of the Bedford Little League, and we'll be back right after this. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. And, of course, this is one of the first weeks in a while that we don't have the opportunity to get cheap coffee on the day after a Patriots game. They have the week off. We are heading into the NFL playoffs or wild card weekend. And funny to watch John Gruden on those ESPN commercials now talking about all the stuff that can happen in wild card weekend when John Gruden has had some fairly significant changes in his life, or at least will, about to give up the Kush broadcaster's gig to become the coach of the Raiders. It's a lot easier to get fired as a coach than it is to get fired as a broadcaster.
Well, he had a perfect setup on Monday Night Football, and I sure enjoyed listening to him. I think he's played his cards well because he's had a chance to interact with all the teams and wait for the perfect opportunity and to go back to the Raiders, where he apparently is a form of a cult hero, is going to be exciting and entertaining to watch.
It's funny to think of him as a cult hero. And I guess before we get into the NFL and talking through it, there is a character who shows up on SportsCenter, and they've been running this segment the entire college football playoffs. And for some reason, maybe it's how it's shot, I don't know why, it's this bear, the bot, and the baby. Have you seen that on SportsCenter?
I think I have seen that.
So basically, long the short of it is they have this guy who's an analyst who's picking teams straight up. And I don't know what his final record was, but at one point he was like 9-16 picking straight up. He was 36%. Like, you could have basically spun a roulette wheel, wet red and black, and done better than this guy has done as a commentator, prognosticator for a guy who's getting paid as an analyst to do that sort of things. It's and then you throw in the fact that they're straight up. There's no spread involved. All he has to do is say, I like this team, I like that team.
He was supposed to be some sort of an expert.
It's interesting. You hear a guy like that on the air, and he's got methodology that is kind of the methodology like you or I would use if we had access to no stats, which would be things like, well, they really seem to come off a great last game, and heading into the bowl, they seem like they're going to be the ones that are going to come out on top. As opposed to if you listen to some of the guys who are a bit more involved, or if you talk to a guy who's at a sports book, they're going to give you far more detail, and it's not a I feel, I think, but it's a mathematical analysis based upon history, not based upon a history of a team, based upon a history of a situation. And a lot of people look at these, the lines that come out for games, whether it's a total, whether it's a betting line, who's going to win, who's going to lose. And it's almost like some sort of witchcraft that it comes up, and it's usually pretty close. But these guys are in the business, the guys who are at the sports books are in the business of doing that analysis, making sure that it is close, making sure that it is right, and trying to, they're in the business to make money themselves. So I don't know. It's you look at somebody who has the luxury of picking straight up and say that the guy was at 36%.
Well, this weekend in the NFL, if you could pick straight up, I think you'd have a huge advantage, you know, with four home favorites that I would pick, four out of four, the Chiefs over the Titans, the Rams over the Falcons, the Jags over the Bills, and the Saints over the Panthers.
So you're going straight with the chalk.
I would go with the chalk, although that's why they play the games, and it is, you know, you've got this oblong pigskin that can bounce in funny ways, and you never know what's going to happen.
It's interesting. I'm looking at all four of them, and I think in three of the four circumstances, I could make a captivating case as to why the underdog has a chance. And I guess I'll go. Kansas City has underperformed all year, and they have, after they started off hot, they've really kind of coasted into the playoffs. Haven't been terribly impressed with them. Tennessee is one that was just a surprising playoff team, to say the least. But when you have a guy like Marcus Mariota, an athlete like that, if he plays like he can play, and this is going to dovetail right into the next one, I think you got a good shot with him as a quarterback. Defense has been decent this year, too. The other one that I would say has a chance, based on he's the kind of guy who can put the team on his back when he needs to, Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. He has been one that, unless he's going up against the defensive buzzsaw like a Denver Broncos team that he faced in the Super Bowl a couple years back, he's one who can kind of get anything done at any point in time. The Rams have played well all year. I will give you that. But I also do think there's something to be said for Matt Ryan, Julio Jones coming back a little bit healthier than he's been, Sanu coming back a little bit more focused than he may have been. They seem to have the weapons. And then, of course, they're two running backs. I would, if I were to consider that, I would certainly take Atlanta. And I might even take Atlanta as a straight-up upset, potentially. Jacksonville has played their brains out all year. I know that Harry here at the station would love for Buffalo to pull off an upset in that one, but that would be the one that I would say is the least likely of the four. But, and obviously you have your reasons for saying that you like all four straight across the board.
Yeah, so starting with Mariota and the Titans, I agree on his athleticism and his potential, but the problem is the Titans have a really vanilla offense.
Yep.
And Mularkey's, you know, smash mouth, exotic smash mouth.
It's impossible to
say. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
The smash mouth running offense is a mouthful, and it hasn't been that dynamic this year. And I think Andy Reid, with, you know, after resting his starters last week, other than one carry for Kareem Hunt, is going to be ready to outcoach Mularkey. So I like Kansas City at home. I also agree that Cam Newton is a wild card, and he has the potential to go off, but he's struggled. The Panthers have lost both matchups to the Saints this year, and beating a team three times is difficult in the same year. But talk about a pair of dynamic running backs.
Oh, Kamara. Ingram
and Kamara are going to be too much for the Panthers. Although Cam Newton does have a strong history also playing in New Orleans, the difference in, you know, he's not up against a defensive buzzsaw in the Saints this year, but the Saints are better defensively than they have been in years past. So I think they're going to hold up at home. Out in L.A., yes, there's Matt Ryan, MVP. They've got all those weapons, pair of running backs. But Steve Sarkisian, as the offensive coordinator, really has not had a strong year. And on the flip side, McVay, the head coach of the Rams, is proving to be a genius. And he's gotten the most out of Gurley. Goff is playing like an all-pro. They've got three weapons at wide receiver that can all hurt you. So I think McVay is going to out-coach the Falcons, and the Rams will have no trouble.
It's interesting when you look at it, though. A year ago when Goff was languishing on the bench, they were talking about him as a potential all-time bust. This is a number one pick who's not going to see the field at all this year, might not see the field at all, period. They bring in Boy Wonder head coach, who has performed amazingly well. And next thing you know, you have this L.A. Rams team that is hosting a playoff game at the L.A. Coliseum. Hey, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. That is truly impressive. And yeah, that is a chance for Steve Sarkisian to coach in a familiar setting that he experienced a great deal of success in back in the early 2000s when he was the offensive coordinator at USC, or co-offensive coordinator, speaking of Boy Wonders, Sarkisian and Lane Kiffin in the same booth with Pete Carroll. And the two of them, and then Sarkisian goes back, gets hired at USC after Kiffin is unceremoniously dismissed. And then Sarkisian is now going back to the Coliseum. And you have to wonder if there are any ghosts in that place that might conjure up, because he didn't leave USC under the best of circumstances either.
Right. I think your USC ties may be clouding your judgment a little bit on Sarkisian, because, you know, the NFL defenses are just so much more sophisticated. And, you know, he does have all his weapons. But I think the change from last year to this year that you mentioned with Goff just is highlighted by the change from Jeff Fisher to Sean McVay.
Oh, yeah.
And the effect that McVay has had on that offense. So I think McVay is the wild card there. And then with the Bills, you know, Harry's Bills, we got to have our fingers crossed that LeSean McCoy can play.
Yep.
Because that's the only chance the Bills have. The Jags, the only way to beat them is on the ground. They're amazing against the pass, and the Bills don't have a passing game. You know, this was highlighted back in, what was it, week 5 or 6, when the Jags beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh. Big Ben had, what, 5 or 6 interceptions and was just terrible. A huge upset, and that was kind of the Jags coming out party. And for some reason, the Steelers didn't run Le'Veon Bell that day as much as they should have, and that's what I think the formula is for the Bills, is they got to hope that McCoy is healthy and, you know, can run in a couple scores for them.
So in the final accounting, Hanson likes Kansas City, the Rams, Jacksonville, New Orleans. I'll take Kansas City. I will take Atlanta plus the points. And I do think they have a chance to pull off an upset. I would love to be able to say that I could pick Buffalo, but I cannot. I would take Jacksonville on that one. And then New Orleans, I do like the Saints. I don't think they're going to win by as much as many people are saying, so I would take Carolina plus the points if I can say such a thing. So with that, we'll be back after this on Fox on Sports, Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, Lauren Fox, Andrew Hanson, and I think this is Hanson's favorite part of the show, where he gets to grill me on things that I probably should know more about. But there is certain entertainment value in getting random questions thrown your way. So with that, all I really know is we're going to talk about baseball free agents, and I'm going to let Hanson do his thing.
That's right, Lauren. For this week's edition of Fox's Hot Stove Report, we are in that period of the winter where Major League Baseball general managers are strategizing. They're making offers. They're making calls. They're trying to decide who they want to add to their team to build that right mix for a championship run in 2018. So put yourself in their position. We're just after the holidays. Team ownership has just told you, Lauren, all right, you've got this amount of money to go spend on free agents. You can do whatever you want. You can go after a couple superstars. You can look for some free agent values on guys who are going to be able to sign them at a lower price, and you think they're going to outperform that contract. So as we kind of look at the big picture, as you head into this free agent season, are you going to prioritize power pitching or power hitting this year?
I am a pitching guy, and I do think if you look at last year's playoffs, the teams that had stronger and more consistent pitching wound up getting where they needed to go. Now, of course, you could make the argument that the Dodgers would have won the whole thing if they don't make some interesting calls. Dave Roberts yanking Rich Hill in the fourth inning of a game when he was kind of sailing along because that was what his book told him to do. And it's easy for me to say, leave Rich Hill in the game. And who's not to say that the next seven guys don't get hits off him? And Roberts looks like a Grady Little clone for leaving him in. But on the flip side of that, teams are doing whatever they can to shorten the game as much as they can. And you look at what Colorado just picked up, Wade Davis, who is one of the premier relief pitchers in baseball now. Wade Davis, a former starting pitcher, he was with Tampa Bay, was not a terribly effective starter. Wound up going to the bullpen for Kansas City, and by having a starter's repertoire and leveraging that coming out of the pen, he became a game changer. The Royals really were able to shorten the games by virtue of the fact that they had Greg Holland at the back end of that bullpen, Davis just ahead of him. And if you could get 5-6 innings out of the starter, you might get a couple innings out of Davis. You might get an inning plus out of Holland, and you are in great shape. So they rode that to an American League pennant in 14 and a World Series in 15. I think that still holds in large part.
So let's start there then, because what happened in Colorado is fascinating to me. The two relievers you just mentioned, when they were in Kansas City, Wade Davis was the setup guy for Greg Holland. And what just happened in Colorado is Greg Holland was the closer for the Rockies last year, put up some good numbers. But what the Rockies decided to do was let Holland go and sign Wade Davis to be their closer. Would you have done the same?
I would say Wade Davis is a step above Greg Holland at this point. Holland came back after the 1 year off because of Tommy John surgery, and he was a bargain basement guy. They paid him. It's amazing when you refer, this is how messed up this stuff gets. I'm referring to a guy who made $6 million last year as a bargain basement guy, but Holland was a bargain basement guy. He wound up getting them 41 saves as a closer for $6 million a year. And in Major League Baseball's numbers, that is a value, and that is a valued commodity to get a guy like that. Now, but a pitcher like Wade Davis, who is, I'd be hard-pressed not to say Wade Davis is one of the top couple to have coming out of your bullpen. The Cubs had him for a year. The Royals had him for a few years before that. He had a microscopic ERA for them the year they won the World Series. It was under one. He has been among the most effective in baseball for the last 4 or 5 years. It is hard not to pick up a guy like that when, if you think that's the last piece of the puzzle, yeah. Colorado's a tough place to pitch, though.
Yeah, Davis really has been lights out in the playoffs over the last couple of years. Been really clutch to go along with his regular season performance. A guy who has not been quite so clutch in the playoffs, Yu Darvish, and you mentioned the Dodgers not quite getting to the mountaintop. So let's turn to the power pitchers, the power arms who are the starting pitchers. Yu Darvish and Jake Arrieta both on the market.
Yep.
Who's your preference there?
I think Darvish will come back fine. The feeling that I got from Arrieta this past year was that Arrieta in the latter half of 16, even when they won the whole thing, and in 17, isn't necessarily the same Jake Arrieta as he was right when he caught fire when he was first with the Cubs. So the And you also look at a guy like Darvish and how good his stuff is. And interesting side note, I don't know if you heard this. Supposedly he can throw in the 80s with his left arm.
He's a true athlete.
Yeah. So Darvish is an athlete. He's a cerebral guy. He realizes that he has something to prove. They've kind of established at this point that he was tipping his pitches in the World Series, which really kind of shuffled the deck for the Astros, and kudos to them for figuring out how he was. I mean, the same way David Price was doing it when he was pitching for Tampa a few years ago. I tend to think Darvish will come back. His is not a physical challenge. His is more of, can he come back and regain his desire to pitch after going through what he went through in the World Series? And I would say, yeah, I think he is mentally strong enough to do it. Does Arrieta physically have what he needs? That would be, to me, more of the question mark.
All right, let's turn from the power arms to the power bats at the corner positions. Starting at first base, you're a big fan of the Kansas City Royals, and two of their young stars who've come up through the ranks with the Royals are now on the market, Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas. Starting at first base, Hosmer, who is a gamer, great defensively, who's won 4 gold gloves, hasn't been one of those over-the-top power guys for first baseman, but he did manage to hit 25 homers last year. Compare him to a guy like Logan Morrison, who went for 38 homers for the Rays last year. Which way do you turn there? And do you think that power can sustain itself?
I would say I wouldn't even worry about the power. He's a gap-to-gap guy. He's a guy who's always going to be on base. He's a guy who is always going to grind out tough at-bats. To me, there's more value from that. As you know, home runs are accidents, so it's not like he's going up there trying to hit bombs. It's just a matter of, to me, he is kind of a modern-day George Brett, without putting too fine a point on him, but that's the kind of hitter that he is and the kind of at-bats that he'll grind out. That's why a guy like that has more value. The 25 home runs, if he's playing a full season, he's going to hit that many home runs just on accident when he just squares up on something. And he's old enough. He is certainly in his prime. Both the Royals and the Padres offered him 7-year deals. And to me, that's not really much of a gamble when you're taking a guy who's going into his age 28 season and offering him that 7-year deal. Be one thing if he's a guy whose entire career is based on speed or based on arm strength, but he's a first baseman. He is going likely, you're not going to lose a whole lot of performance throughout that deal unless the guy gets hurt. Logan Morrison, to me, he's a fine player, but I think Hosmer is a class above him.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you, Lauren, if I'm the owner and you're my general manager and you're talking to me about Hosmer and you're saying, you know what, Andrew, I think we should spend $147 million over 7 years for this player, and you tell me he's the modern-day George Brett, I'm saying let's do this deal right away, because George Brett is my all-time favorite as a kid growing up. His type of intensity was infectious, the way he ran down the first baseline every single time. And if Hosmer is, 50% of that, and I think he is because he played 162 games last year, then that can really do wonders for your organization.
There are a few matches for George Brett when it comes to intensity like that. If for anybody who hasn't seen it, if you Google the George Brett Pine Tar game from 1983 when he comes flying out of the dugout, that is, you can't match that. I mean, the guy looked like he wanted to rip Tim McClellan, the home plate umpire's head off, literally. But Hosmer, he's a different kind of intense. There's a difference between 80s baseball intense and 2017 baseball intense. Thank goodness. And the game is changing, and the idea of playing the game the right way is changing, and it's hopefully becoming more of a loose game, a fun game, a game that would welcome a little bit of celebration here and there and smiling and playing hard. That's the kind of stuff that you want to see, and I'll bounce back to the NFL. That, for me, has been one of the most understated stories of this year in the NFL, is the fact that you can celebrate after a touchdown now. If you sell a car at a car dealership, they ring a bell. If you're an NFL player and you score a touchdown, why shouldn't you be able to celebrate? If you're a baseball player and you hit a home run, act like you've been there before, but it's fun.
Nobody,
act like it's fun.
Nobody would know who Icky Woods is if NFL players couldn't celebrate. No. The good old Icky Shuffle. But the other Royals corner infielder that's on the market, Mike Moustakas, he does fit that bill. You see him chewing his gum throughout the day, which is kind of a throwback. And he seems like he has that loose mentality. he was named AL Comeback Player of the Year last year after hitting 38 home runs after dealing with some injuries before that. Is he a valuable, is he worth the price tag this offseason?
I don't think he's a Hosmer price tag. He's a nice price tag, but I would put Hosmer above him as well. His power numbers are basically right on line with Logan Morrison's, but if I were forced to choose, if I were the Royals forced to choose among, or I guess in this case between those two, Hosmer would be the one. The other one that you're going to get to in the outfield is Lorenzo Cain, who if the Red Sox didn't have a completely crowded outfield, that would be a dream guy to see come here and patrol the expanse of Fenway Park center field. I mean, of course, you have a guy named Mookie Betts, who is, I think, when all is said and done, going to be among the best to have ever played out there for the Red Sox. But Cain is one who is an exciting defensive player, very exciting offensive player, a leader in the clubhouse, a gritty guy, an intelligent baseball player. And there are a lot of teams that are going to do right by making a run at him, even though he is a little bit older.
Yeah, fascinating story, too, because he started playing baseball late, if I'm not mistaken. And wow, what an athlete. Just speed, power, range in the outfield. Not enough people can appreciate that because he plays in Kansas City, small market. Although, he has gotten some notoriety with the Royals' recent postseason success. But you mentioned the outfielder group. So here we are in New Hampshire with tons of Red Sox fans, and J.D. Martinez is one of the names that's been bandied about, power guy. Maybe he helps the Red Sox compete with the Yankees. So how do you evaluate and compare J.D. Martinez with a guy like Cain, who may not have quite as much power as Martinez, but is quite an all-around player?
I like Martinez defensively. I don't like him as much as I like Cain defensively. They're different types of players. The thing with J.D. Martinez is he's a very good player, difference maker with the bat. Where I would give him an edge over Cain is his ability to stay healthy. Cain, by virtue of how he plays the game, he is going to spend time on the DL just because you have a guy who a ball's hitting the gap. He's got a chance to get it. He's throwing his body against the wall, throwing his body against the warning track. He doesn't care. J.D. Martinez is an intense player, but he is not quite intense to the level of a guy like Cain. And I, strangely enough, I might also put Cain in that Eric Davis, if you go back to the 80s, the Eric Davis type mold, the guy who, great athlete, who will play so hard that unfortunately he's going to wind up laid up for a couple stretches during the season.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing you're trying to do, of course, with free agency is find the undervalued commodity, a wild card. So one more for you is Carlos Gonzalez for the Rockies, who I think has just an incredibly sweet swing. And for his career, he's already over 200 homers. He's still a young guy. But last year, his performance really dipped.
Yeah.
So what do you think happened with Cargo, and would you take a flyer on him?
I think he's worth taking a flyer on. If you're the Red Sox, though, I just don't know where you put him. Again, it's the same sort of thing. You have a very athletic outfield. I don't know what you do with Carlos Gonzalez. Now, he's going to be the kind of guy who somebody will sign him for 2 years and $30 million, and he's going to give them a great couple of years. But, boy, that's not the best year to have the worst year of your career, the year that you're going into free agency, particularly when you're in your early 30s.
So true. Well, with that, we're going to have to wait and see how this all pans out in the next few weeks, and we'll see if the Red Sox get one of those outfielders to compete with the Yankees.
It'll be interesting, but I mean they have their own group of outfielders. It's just a matter of getting the production out of those guys that you think they should. So that concludes this week's what I can never remember the name of the segment.
This is the I know it's a hard one to remember. It's Fox's Hot Stove Report.
Yeah, eventually I'll get it. Lauren Fox alongside Andrew Hansen, and before we go, just wanted to take a quick moment. Say thank you to my co-host, Andrew Hansen, for all of his hard work and preparation going into the show. Also, thank you to our guest, Mark Elmendorf, the coach of the Bedford High School boys basketball team, Joe Riccio, the president of the Bedford Little League, and also to the crew here at WBNH, Bedford 105.1, Bill Jennings, Harry Kozlowski, Chris Gentry, and Colleen Richardson for everything that they do to allow us to get this show on the air. If you have any thoughts for show topics or guests, you can certainly reach out. You can find us on Facebook. It's foxonsports.com. We'll actually get you to the Facebook page. So if you have any thoughts on just about anything, by all means, hit us up. And we really want more likes. Like, I need gratification.
We like likes.
We like likes. So go there and like us on Facebook. Give us that blue thumbs up. With that, another week of Fox on Sports is on the books. We will talk to you next week on Bedford 105.1.